Check. 1, 2, 1, 2. Wanna welcome everybody to the first inaugural episode, Track Talk with CH and Ferdy. I'm Coach Harris, aka CH.
I'm Ferdy, full name Ferdinand Delgado.
And welcome. What's this podcast gonna be about? Hey, track talk, track and field, everything track and field, perspective from coaches, people who've run before. We're going to talk about things going on in the track and field world at the high school level, the collegiate level, the pro level, things of that nature. We want to give, you know, people insight on what's going on as far from like a coach's perspective when we're setting up practices, you know, from a coach's perspective when we're trying to put together workouts. You know, we want to highlight things that coaches may see, highlight things athletes may see, give information to parents so that they have, an idea and an understanding of what all goes into this world we call track, you know. Track love. And just for real quick, we'll just give a little bio on who we are. I'll let Ferdy go first.
All right. Ferdinand Delgado, as mentioned earlier, coached for a number of years. I think I started in 2006, 2007, at about that time. I primarily have worked with sprinters and hurdlers, although I've also helped some middle distance runners as well. Currently, I've just finished a Master of Science degree in Kinesiology in the Sports Sciences from Texas A&M University in Corpus Christi. Throughout my coaching time, I achieved a USATF Level 2 coaching certification, as well as USTF CCCA, Sprints, Hurdles, and Relay Specialist, along with a Strength and Conditioning certification as well. Take it away.
I got to follow that, right? All right, well, CH stands for Coach Harris. I'm Brian Harris. I've been coaching about the same time since 2007. Started out as an assistant and became a head coach. Main focus, once again, is kind of like Ferdy. I've been mainly sprints, hurdles, jumps. But in certain situations, when you're a head coach, sometimes you have positional coaches. Sometimes you're the only coach. And I'm pretty sure as this podcast goes on and we have people listening in, they'll be able to relate to a lot of the things we're talking about. So currently I'm in a situation where I'm a position coach, where I work with sprints, jumps, and hurdles. And originally I was in a position where I was the head coach and I was the everything coach. So I've had pretty much experience having to coach every event, I would say, except pole vault. Pretty much pole vault's a whole different science. We'll get into that later. But been coaching for 10 years. I am also a USATF track official. USATF is USA Track and Field. I'm a USATF and a New York State licensed track and field official. I am a USATF Level 1 coach, and I am also a USTF CCA Level 1 coach as well. I have those certifications, as well as my New York State certification, which is required to coach any sport in New York State. So that's a little on me. And also, one last thing, I want to throw out a quick shout out to the Rochester Running Rebels, our summer track club. I'm a coach and the athletic director of the Rochester Running Rebels Summer Track Club, which is one of our local track clubs in the area for USA Track and Field. So just a little quick, tidbits on us so you know who we are and what our experience level is and where we're coming from. So guess we can just jump right into the topic of the day. Yeah. Okay. So we're going to talk about what are we doing as coaches? And this is basically an inner look for the athletes and the parents on what we do as far as like how we prepare for our training. And I'll let you start off first with, talking about training plan before we even get in the athletes, the training plan.
Yeah. The training plan, that's it's a little tricky because it depends on, obviously, if you have a team and you've been there for a while, who's coming back that has previously run or been a part of the team. Therefore, you're looking at the training plan as individual or more so in a group setting, because sometimes you have so many athletes you got to work with at one time. Individualizing is difficult, even though it's doable. So what you want to look for or look at, or what we look at, is first kind of the annual plan. What are we, what is the athlete supposed to be doing or going to be doing? Are they running indoor track and outdoor track? Have they come from Or are they doing cross country? Have they come from cross country? Have they come from soccer? Are they playing basketball? Are they playing football? So a lot of these things determine what we're going to do throughout the year to help them achieve personal best, or, you know, reach championships or whatever their goals may be. Then with that, we separate things into different phases. Maybe, and just to keep it simple for people to understand, we might look at a monthly plan. So what goals we want to accomplish per each month or series of months. Then from there, when we understand what the theme of the monthly plan is, then we look week by week. And kind of there, we want to probably determine what our intensities, what our volumes are going to be as far as what exercises we're going to do. Basically what exercises we're going to do. And then we take it apart into the daily plan. Now, the daily plan can be determined by athletic ability. It can be determined by the weather outside. Maybe, up here in Rochester, New York, snows quite a bit. Can't do many things outside, so we may be restricted to what's inside, or to what we have available inside the school. So, and then each daily plan, it also has a theme. If we want to work on speed and power day, then we have our sets for that. And then if we want to work on a more higher intensity anaerobic glycolytic type thing, which I might get a little sciencey in this because I do have a background in it, then that's a theme for another day. Then we also have recovery days where we
heal.
Yeah, pretty much try to help the athlete replenish so they're able to do the workouts and run at meets more efficiently.
Yep. And just to chime in here, the theme and the plan can be totally different, depending on the athlete. So you may have a theme that you want to focus on for that day or for that week, but the plan for two athletes can be completely different. Same theme, but a different plan, because there's things you want to take into consideration when we're talking about putting together this annual plan. You have your event-specific group. Obviously, sprinters are not going to be doing the same type of training as a miler or a two-miler. The training regimen is going to be a lot different, for somebody who's running a 5,500-meter dash versus somebody who might run the 3,000, 3,200. So the training plan is going to be different based on your event-specific group. A shot putter or a weight thrower, they may do something similar to sprinters, but there's going to be specific things that they do that a jumper won't do. So things like that are to take into consideration. You have your training age. You have your seniors who have been running for 4 years. You have your seniors that just came out for the first time and know nothing about track. And you have your freshmen who may have been starting in seventh grade, so they're a three-year athlete, even though they're in ninth grade, where you also have your freshmen that this is their first time out. So the difference between that freshman who's their first time out and that senior that's their first time out isn't really much different. You have to kind of treat them similarly because they have a similar training age versus their actual age of development. Injuries are going to take a part in how you plan. If somebody's coming off an injury, somebody has a minor but nagging injury, you want to take those things into consideration as far as, okay, the group is doing this, but this athlete or this group of athletes who are fighting these nagging injuries, we're going to modify it a little bit, because we want them to get stronger. We want them to get healthy. We want them to come back and be their best. So we don't want to run them into the ground so that they never can heal. Strength and abilities. That will also come along with age, specific like developmental age. So for example, even though you might have a ninth grader who's a stud versus a ninth grader who just came out for the first time, a ninth grader is still a ninth grader, as far as development wise. So there's certain things you still don't want to do, no matter how good that athlete is. You want to still try and hold back from doing things you might do with your senior athletes who have developed a lot more, especially when you're talking about, men versus women. Women mature around 15, 16, they're peaking out, that they're done developing, if we're talking just on a broad scale. Men, on the other hand, can develop well into their early 20s. So that is something that you want to make sure you take into consideration when you're talking about strength abilities. And then there's other deficiencies. You know, you have your ongoing medical restrictions where they can participate in the sport, but they might have something that's just holding them back. For example, like an athlete who has a minor case of scoliosis, an athlete who's diabetic, you know, things of that nature, that the medical restriction is not going away, but it's not preventing them from competing. So that you still can work around that, you know, and just try to make sure that you're, you know, doing things that, that are going to help that athlete, you know, be their best that they can be, you know. I think I kind of ran through those. Did I miss anything there that you could think of?
Not really. Everyone's individual, so you have to treat them as such.
Yeah.
And definitely with the age, you know, I can think back at a time when I was working with a freshman who on the team was the top freshman and was, you know, even doing better than other upperclassmen. But I still restricted the amount of workload that this individual did. A lot of it had to do with, one, the age, definitely, and two, injuries from the previous year. So, yeah, at times it looked like she might not do as much as everyone else, which was true, but it wasn't because I was telling her to be lazy. So, yeah, there's certain things that come up on whatever. And we'll be talking about all of this stuff in the upcoming episodes and whatnot. There's a lot to talk about, especially, you know, when it comes to psychology as well. So,
definitely.
Yeah.
Okay, and also when we're talking about this training plan, you know, we have to talk about the difference between how is this training plan going to work on a team that's, say, 24 kids or a team that's 24 kids in each group, you know, each event-specific group. You know, you have your team that's, you have 24 kids. They might be 19 sprinters, 2 distance runners. It might be 19 distance runners, 2 sprinters, and a couple of throwers here and there. You might have a well-balanced team where you have, like, 25 sprinters. You have about 22 distance runners, about 12 throwers, and then, you know, your jumpers and your hurdlers and all that in between. So, you know, these are things that you want to make sure that you take note of when you're putting together your annual plan, to make sure that you have, the way I like to look at it, I like to make sure that I have everything in place for everybody, even if I know I'm probably not going to have them, because you never know what you're going to get from year to year. You might have, you know, a different team outdoor than you did indoor. You know, you might be expecting, okay, I'm only going to have sprinters, jumpers, a couple of distance runners, and then you get a bunch of distance runners, a bunch of hurdlers, a bunch of throwers, and a bunch of pole vaulters that you didn't, you know about, because it's high school. You know, kids try new things. You all of a sudden you get a bunch of new kids you never met before. They like the sports, now they're around for, which is a good thing. But you want to make sure that you just have, you know, everything at hand so that you can always refer back to it just in case you do have every event group in place.
I like small teams. I never like the large team, even though coaches look for big numbers. There's more people to pick, you know, in a group. You know, maybe there's, you know, if there's more athletes, then there's probably more athletes who are really good.
Yeah.
I would rather work with 3 people. That's just my personal preference. Especially because I worked a lot with hurdles, and trying to individualize, hurdles are difficult because they really need to be individualized. So
it's not that event you just throw somebody in. Hey, let's see if you can hurdle. That's the event you want to, let's see if you can hurdle in practice over small hurdles. Then we'll gradually move you up. And when we feel like you're ready, when you feel like you're confident, then we'll put you in there. Sometimes it takes a month. Sometimes it takes longer.
And sometimes they scare the hell out of me.
Yeah.
When they go over a hurdle.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sure a lot of coaches, if you're listening, you've felt this before. And then, hey, they're going to fall as well. So get ready to pick them up or not, really. You're just going to tell them to get up. Haven't had too many injuries. Pretty much the worst injury would have been a torn meniscus with someone who was in 9th grade, but yeah, she ended up doing pretty well. Went to Nationals, All-American, you know, a few years later. So, you know, you can bounce back for sure.
Yeah.
But, I like small numbers, but whatever. You can't dictate how many people are going to show up.
Yeah, and I think the resources you have with, you know, assistant coaches also helps out the mix because, you know, once again, I came from a small team where I had 28 kids, not 28 girls or 28 boys. I had 28, period. You know, it might be 24 girls and 8, you know, and 4 guys. It might be 8 guys and 20 girls, but, you know, I just had 28 kids versus I come to a big team where just in my training group, I have about 30. So it's like I'm coaching the same size team, but it's only one specific training group versus the whole team. So having position coaches and specialty coaches can help, you know, say you are like Ferdy and you like a small team, you know, having a lot of position coaches. If you have a distance coach, you have a throwers coach, you have a jumps coach, you have a pole vault coach, then, you know, you can make your groups a little bit smaller. But also that depends on the type of school district you're in and can they afford to have, you know, multiple coaches and things like that. But there's other ways around that we've figured out over the years. So, but yeah, but going back to the injury that you brought up, that's another thing I wanted to segue into. I think you feel like you threw me an alley-oop there. One of the main concerns and the main things you want to focus on when you're doing any plan, annual, monthly, daily, weekly, you want to focus on safety. At the end of the day, that should be the number one goal, number one theme. You know, coaches talk about, oh, my coaching philosophy this, my coaching philosophy that. My coaching philosophy is I want you to make it through the entire season and not just kind of like hang on to make it. I want you to be your best at the end of the season. So if today, for example, we're supposed to do a certain part of our workout that might be a little bit too much for an athlete, I'm going to say, you know what? We're not going to do that today. Good example, a lot of my athletes, they have the Northeastern region illness of shin splints. If you live in the Northeast and you have indoor track, I'm pretty sure coaches and athletes know what I'm talking about. We run on hard concrete floors for about 4 months since this is the longest season, the indoor season. And after a while, it can, you know, have a tendency to beat up on the shins. So, you know, I took it upon myself to say, okay, we're supposed to be doing bounds today. How are bounds going to help a bunch of athletes who are starting to feel the pain of shin splints on hard concrete floors? If we had, you know, access to an area where the floors weren't as hard, for example, our wrestling room, but we have a nationally ranked wrestling team, so they're in there all the time, but I can use it in outdoor practice, but not in indoor. So I felt like it was better to sacrifice the plyometrics, the high intensity plyometrics, I'd say, and make sure that the athletes can, you know, remain healthy than to say, oh no, today's plyo day, we gotta do plyos, we're doing hurdle hops, knowing that I'm gonna lose probably like 3 or 4 kids who already have shin splints. Somebody else could roll an ankle, and safety has to be, you know, first.
A big quote I've used and I've seen, I forgot who said it, it's 1, do no harm, 2, do no harm, 3, do no harm. So you want to keep everyone safe. I'm sure you've actually, it brings me to a situation, I think, that happened at the University of Oregon either 2-3 years ago. I forgot when. It was their strength and conditioning coach. There were a lot of people, not a lot of people, but basically some athletes, I forgot from what team, were doing very high intensity, high volume work in the weight room and whatnot. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, a couple of the athletes ended up with rhabdomyolysis, which, if you look it up, is definitely not good. That's definitely your body breaking down and just deteriorating as it is, and you will be hospitalized if that's the case.
Oof.
So yeah, if there's an athlete and we see they're trying to lift the weights that they can't really do, hey, just either we'll stop that or we'll lower the weight that we're doing if we're talking about weight room.
Yeah.
You know, if we see any, like, the one thing about coaches is that, you know, on top of figuring out what activities to do, we do have to be vigilant and to make sure that the athlete is safe, because a lot of times, and we can probably profess this as former athletes, we're going to push forward if we're actually really into it.
Yeah,
we don't want anyone to stop us. So it's our jobs as coaches and understanding that mindset of the athlete where we have to slow them down.
Or sometimes stop them.
Yeah, or sometimes stop. So I think, that's key there, just being vigilant, just seeing what they do. I tend to notice, you know, small movements, like if I see somebody's favoring their left leg for something, if they're limping just slightly, I've kind of had, you know, experience with the individual where I know they're, you know, they should be doing one movement a certain way, but they're kind of doing it a different way, and that's when I start to understand probably what their issues are.
Yeah. And even prior to injury, I mean, that you can notice that same type of thing in the weight room. You know, a kid might be doing their first attempt at power cleans, and you see that weight is coming up high on one side and low on the other because there's a little bit of imbalance. They might be rocking back on their heels, not being flat-footed. And I like to tell kids all the time, you know, go light and keep it right. You know, once going back to my overall theme of just safety, I'd rather a kid in the weight room lift lightweight, doing the correct and proper form and technique, and then gradually move up than to try and, you know, do some super heavy weight. Oh, we need to be explosive. We need to be powerful. Sectionals is around the corner, and they tear something, or maybe they just get discouraged and like, I don't like this. And I can't lift it, and I'm embarrassed, and I don't want to do it anymore. Because a lot of times that can be the situation too. Kids don't like to lift weights because they feel like they're not as strong as everybody else. So don't force them to try and be as strong as everybody else. Let them know it's okay to lift light and do it right instead of, you know, trying to be Hercules in the weight room. So, yeah. And I think that's pretty much covering a lot of the things that we want to talk about when we're sitting back and we're discussing our annual plan and how we want to lay it out and things of that nature. And then you get that thing they call the track schedule. So then you have your track meets. You want to actually put those into your annual plan as well, because the importance of a track meet is also going to determine what you're going to be doing for that week, that month, you know, leading up to that meet. You know, is this an early season meet where we're just trying to see where we're at? Is this, you know, a championship meet where there's, you know, there's titles on the line? And how do you value each meet? Do you value an early season meet the same way you value a late season meet? For outdoor track coaches, do you value a league meet the same way you would value an invitational? You know, I know, for example, I personally don't care about league meets. I look at league meets as competitive competition. If we win, great. If we don't, great. I'll share a story. Last year, my girls' team, I think we got beat by maybe 90 points to one of the top teams in our area in Section 5. And, you know, they were down, obviously, because it was an embarrassing score. They announced it over the loudspeaker and everything like that. And I pulled them in at the end of the meet. I'm like, look, I see everybody with your heads down, but I want, if you had a PR or a season best today, I want you to raise your hand. And like 90% of the team raised their hand because they had a PR or season best. And I'm like, that's more important than the score, because nobody's going to remember the score of a league meet from 1998. They're going to remember who won sectionals, but they're not going to remember the score of a league meet. And at the end of the day, if you're trying to win a championship, if you're trying to, you know, win your specific event at a championship meet, you know, then you can't really worry about how you place or how your team places in a league meet if you're on pace with the goals that you set for yourself. If your goal is to run a certain time in the 400 and each week you lose, but you're getting closer and closer and closer to that goal, then that's success. And I've told athletes before, I'm like, if you come in dead last every week, but you still have a PR or a season best, that's improvement. So who cares what place you came in? You're improving based on your goals.
Yeah, I don't think I have anything else to add to that.
Yeah,
I personally don't care about league meets either.
Yeah,
this is long. Usually, if I'm looking at. And by league meets, we usually mean
dual meets, tri meets.
So it's usually one team against another team. And so it's a small scale track meet. The only real thing that's probably going to happen is the score is going to end up on the newspaper.
Pretty much.
And yeah, there you go. So whatever. I don't really care. But if we're, and this goes back to themes, part of the theme with an athlete, I might work with one athlete on a certain aspect of their event, a different athlete with a different aspect of their event, and then we're just looking to synthesize and put it together, you know, try to work it out at these league meets, and when we get to the championship time, hopefully it's second nature, might not be, but you know, that's kind of the goal there as well.
And another reason I'm not really the type of coach that puts a lot of, you know, into league meets, I look at it like this. When we're in the indoor season, we have a full week of training, and then we have a meet at the end. And then based on that meet, we can say, okay, this is what we did well. This is what we need to work on. We go back. We have another full week to work on those things to try and improve, you know, week by week by week. With league meets, you have practice Monday. You have a league meet Tuesday or Wednesday, so it's like right in the middle of your practice week, and then you'll have an invitational on Friday and Saturday. So I like to look at these league meets as competitive competition. So I'm still, obviously, we're going to run the meet, and I don't mind winning league meets. However, if we don't win because we didn't have the right athlete in this particular event, like I don't have my best athlete running the 3,000 this week because maybe the training that we have planned for them says they need to run the 1,500 this week and then follow back with the 200 because we don't want them, you know, getting burnt out. And that's what the workout is for this week, because they might run the 15, come back and run the 4x8, and they have a 200 in between there just to kind of keep the legs fresh, you know. Or they might be the 1,500 runner, but today's workout says, okay, you need to run the 3,000, so we're not going to run you in the 1,500 and kill you before you run the 3,000, because we want you to run a nice, hard 3,000 a day or 3,200. So those are some of the reasons why I don't put too much of, you know, I don't want to put pressure on kids that, oh, my God, we got to win. We need 5 more points, because then you're not really focusing on the goal at hand, which is to try and improve each athlete in their specific events. You know, and like Ferdy said, you might be looking at 2 athletes in the same event, hurdles, for example. One person might have a strong trail legs, so you're looking at how they're attacking the hurdle. Another person might have a strong lead leg, but their trail leg is bad, so you're looking at that aspect and then trying to work on that. So, you know, also,
I call it practice.
Yeah. Practice with guests.
Practice with another team.
Yeah. And I also look at it like this. When you really want to see where you stand is at the weekend invitationals, because then you'll have 15 plus schools there where there'll be more competition, there'll be more talent, so you can actually gauge and see where you're at, where you might be running against in a league meet against a school where you're the top 200 runner, but the team you're going against is that distance dominant, so you're not really getting pushed in that meet, so it's pretty much a workout. Now on the weekend of the invitational, you might be running against the 5 top 200 runners in your section or in your area, so you're going to get a better idea of where you're at, you know, because you're definitely going to get pushed in that aspect. So, you know, that's something to take into consideration. How important is that regular season time? Not only that, we have a county championship, a league championship at the end of the season before our sectional championship. So I feel like we can go 0-5, but if we win the county championship or place high in there, that's saying a lot more than, you know, if we were 5-0 in our league meets and score 12 points at a championship meet. So,
which is not good.
Not at all. and numbers can win a league meet anyway. If you have numbers, you can win a league meet. I had a team I had a team that hadn't lost a league meet in 3 years, sheerly based on numbers and talent just working together perfectly. We had the numbers and we had the talent in those events, so it just worked in our favor. There were some meets where we'd be like, okay, you guys can have the 100 and 200. We'll just take everything 400 and up and field events. And then the one meet we had where we finally lost, we lost by like, I think, a couple points because we didn't have anybody in the 3,000. I'm like, well, I'm not going to just throw somebody in the 3,000 that doesn't run it just to get some points. What if they get hurt in there? And that's not even their race. It was pointless for a couple of points that nobody's going to care about, especially if they come back and win the league title at the end of the season. So, and especially if they, you know, hit their goal times, they hit their goal marks, they hit their goal distances in their specific events. And that's what it's all going to be about, you know. victories are for us coaches.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
We'll deal with the wins and losses, or that's as far as it comes to points or whatever.
Yeah.
We'll let the athlete perform to what they can do.
Exactly. And if you notice, I didn't mention in my bio what my my career record is, because I have no idea what it is.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever kept track.
I think I've won more than I lost, but the actual number, who cares?
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's going to be a championship.
Yeah. Do we want to talk about relays now? Because you know that is the...
A quick overview, I guess. Yeah. I mean, a little bit. I'm pretty sure in the following episodes we'll have a lot more say about it. Relays are fun. So in a coach's mind, number one, I think the easiest way to look at it, so a relay has four runners in it. Yeah, runners, because there's no other kind of, well, they can be, but that's a whole different topic.
Yeah.
If you pick the four best, like say we're doing a 4x100 meter relay, I mean, that's one way to go. You pick the four best 100 sprinters in your group. Same thing with the 4x400 meter relay, your four best 400s, and the 4x8, your best 800s. I think it's easier to put your best 4x8 if you just pick the best four.
Yeah.
Not necessarily in the 4x1. 4x1's a little tricky.
Yeah.
Because it involves what we call a, blind handoff, whatever you want to call it.
And I would kind of relate the 4x1 in track and field. It's probably closely related to basketball and team chemistry. You know, when basketball players, I'm speaking of like, you know, college and pros, they have training camp and they're, you know, they're working out the kinks and they're, you know, people will say, oh, they're developing good chemistry. Now, I threw the pass, I knew exactly where he was going to be at because, you know, he's always there and so on and so forth. You kind of need that when you're doing a blind exchange in the 4x1. So it even goes down to, we've had people in the past that don't get along. So it's like, you're not going to hand off to that person because y'all don't get along. There's no chemistry there. You're not going to care. If somebody drops a baton, one person going to blame the other. I mean, there's lots of different ways to look at it, you know. Should you put your fastest first? Should you put your fastest last? You know, things of that nature. So there's a lot of different ways to look at it, but it, like Ferdy said, don't just quick look to, okay, these are my four fastest 100-meter runners, especially if they all are only fast on straightaways and not curves.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, then, there's so much into a 4x1. I mean, some people can overthink it. I probably do overthink it. But there's also some people who just can't handle the baton. Really, for those that don't know, the goal of the 4x, for any relay, is to get the baton from the start line to the finish line, hopefully without dropping it.
As fast as possible.
Yeah. If someone can't handle the baton, if someone can't receive a baton, if someone has trouble passing the baton, and yeah, there are people who have trouble passing a baton, then you just can't have them on.
Yeah.
Because you won't get you won't get a good time. You won't get the baton around. You might drop it, and it's a liability. So, yes, relays are... they're looked at as important. So for an athlete or a parent to understand, if your kid or if you aren't on a relay, there's a good reason for it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it might also be disciplinary, but, you know, we'll figure that one out as the time comes.
Yeah. It could be disciplinary. It could be nagging injury. This meet isn't that important. We value your health more than you on this one relay that you're going to be on in 2 or 3 weeks when you come back and you're fully healthy. And it could go down to like what Ferdy was talking about earlier, just maybe you're the fastest on the team and, you know, the glory on the relay is the anchor leg, is the fast leg. But maybe the anchor leg, like Ferdy said, can't receive a baton, but they have the best start. So they go first, you know. Or maybe your fastest runners run the curves better than other people, so you have them first and third. You know, maybe they don't run curves well at all, so you have them second and fourth. There's a lot of different variables. And it changes year to year. You know, somebody who was terrible at a baton might grasp the concept, and then, hey, okay, you can run that person second. You can run that person anchor. Some people just might be terrified of certain things, and some unfortunately, some people don't get over their fears. So you just keep them in that same position, because if that's where they're comfortable at, and if they're doing a good job where they're at and they're comfortable with it, at the end of the day, you want a clear mindset from a high school athlete, especially. Even a college or a pro athlete, you know, the mind doesn't really change. If you're a nervous person, you know, you'll be a nervous person until you overcome those fears. So you want to just make sure that you have that person in the best mental capacity to perform wherever you put them at first before you figure out, you know, all the other variables that can come into play. So
you're welcome. We'll definitely we'll definitely talk more about that later, we can get so far in depth with it. I personally, I love relays. 4x1 is probably way too stressful for me.
Yeah, right. I'm a 4x4 guy, but I like all relays.
Yeah. I watch it on TV, though. Actually, Team USA always scares me, though.
Yeah.
Because they're always dropping a baton. Team USA always drops a baton. Unfortunately. Team USA always drops a baton.
Say it again.
Team USA always drops the baton.
Men and women.
Yeah, but when we win, we break records.
Even when we lose, we break records.
Suck it, Team Jamaica. All right, next. Excuse me, sorry.
Shout out to all the Jamaicans out there, especially my wife. But anyway, moving right along. So why do we do this? Why do we coach track? You know, we getting big fat checks and balling, making it rain at the club?
No.
Absolutely not. Not at the high school level, especially. I think I
calculated. Not many people in the college levels either.
Yeah, I think I calculated out to be about gas money each week. With a little bit extra on the side.
Yeah.
All right. So, but you know, there are some people who do it for the extra money, you know? So you just have to figure out first, you know, why do you want to become a coach? Are you a former athlete? Are you intrigued with this sport? Do you want to learn? Are you looking for an extra paycheck? Because that can also determine, you know, how much effort you're going to put into all the things we talked about, you know, as far as your annual plan, you know, your weekly plan. Your daily plan, you know, how you look at, okay, am I going to have a cookie cutter cookbook? This is what we're doing today and that's it. And if you got anything to say, this is what we're doing and that's it. Or are you going to be the one that looks and say, okay, this is what we're doing. However, you're hurt. You sit this one out until you get to this part of the workout. Or how about you go hit the fitness center and ride the bike for about 20 minutes just so you get some aerobic, you know, work in, and then go to the weight room. And if you say you have a leg injury, okay, just do upper body today. Are you going to be that person that's going to, you know, break it down individually so that people don't feel like, once again, the whole pressure thing. You don't want to pressure athletes into thinking, oh my God, if I don't do this workout, coach is going to kill me. I'm not going to run on the relay. I'm not going to do this, do that. So.
Oh, you probably won't run on the relay, but no.
Yeah, if you're hurt, yeah, you're not running on the relay.
You're hurt, you're probably not, but, yeah. You know, you'll get over it.
Yeah,
there's been plenty of relays I haven't been on as an athlete.
Yeah.
I'm living.
Yeah, but unless you're a millionaire.
I'd love to be a millionaire.
I would too. God. I just coach and collect interest.
Yeah.
But unless you're a millionaire, make sure you have another job. Don't depend on coaching to be your financial come up, because it's not going to be. But, you know, you have to do it. You know, people do it for different reasons. So just hopefully you love it when you decide to do it, if you decide to become a coach.
And you if know? You have the goal of being a top level coach, and I mean we'll also talk about this in a future episode when we talk about new coaches, if there's a goal of being a really, really good coach and make money off of it, there are avenues for it. It will take a long time, though.
Definitely. It's the same thing with officiating. It's going to take a long time, but depending on, like, once again, why you said why you're into it, there are avenues for it that can help you accomplish your goal. So, you know, but it's just like anything. It's not going to happen overnight. If it was, everybody do it. I've been coaching for 10 years, and I'm still at the high school level. Probably going to stay at the high school level because I enjoy the high school level. So, I mean, my goal is to coach at this level. I'm not looking to go to college and coach Division I track and field. That's a lot of pressure. That's like the 4x1 of coaching. You know, every meet matters. You need to win. It's basically like college football. Winning, you're in. You lose, it's over.
Yeah. Division I is different. I mean, it's a lot more cutthroat with, like, basketball and football.
Yeah.
But still, the same idea applies. And, yeah, so, I mean, you know, do what you want. Yeah. As far as if I mean, do what you want in a responsible way. If you just want to coach at the high school level, don't just make sure you want to you don't do the kids a disservice.
Yeah. Make sure that you like kids if you coach at the high school level as well.
Yeah, well,
to a certain extent. I mean,
I don't like children. I don't like kids at all.
But you the kids is a difference.
Yeah, I do. Well, you know, with the in my experience is more with the high school level. Usually they want to be there, so that's easier to work with. I would never be a high school teacher.
That's a whole different monster, you know. So, and then also, say for example, you are a former athlete, and that's one of the reasons you want to coach, because you want to share some of the knowledge that you had. You know, make sure that if you're coaching a specific event, that you know you're into that event, you know. And if you're not into that event, but you need to coach that event, make sure you do some research to learn that event, because we can never stop learning. The day I always feel like the day I stop learning and know everything in track is probably the day I should retire, because I become a jerk, because I'm a know-it-all. And I don't want to be that. I mean, I change things sometimes every year, sometimes season to season, because new technology comes out. You find out certain things might work better for your team. You find out certain things might be redundant, so you can take them out. You know, the concentration in certain events of your team might change over the course of 2 years, where you might graduate a heavy volume of sprinters, and then you're top heavy in distance runners. So, you know, things like that may change. So I would just say be prepared to not – how should I word this? Be prepared to not know everything, but also be prepared to not be afraid to go find something out. Don't be afraid to ask. All coaches steal. If you don't, you should be.
Yeah.
So just try and find out as much as you can about your events. I mean, there's a lot of things online available. Don't just be the YouTube coach. But, you know, don't just be the ask somebody else coach. Check out everything, you know. Just, you know, there's programs out there that you can purchase. There's free programs. There's articles online. There's YouTube videos. This is a social media age. There's people you can follow on Twitter, people you can follow on Instagram. There's lots and lots of information out there. So I would just say just make yourself available. Make that information available to you. And make yourself available to take it in as well. So, yeah.
No, I have nothing else to put on that. Yeah, that's why I stayed quiet.
All right. If you're a parent that is interested in coaching,
listen. you parent coaches, I get it. You guys show favoritism to your child.
Yeah. You can't.
I mean, you can't.
You can, but you can't.
Yeah, you can, but you can't.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think I'd want to be on a team where I have a kid that calls me dad.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'd rather steer away from that. But anyways, go ahead.
Yeah, but there are going to be some parents that want to coach, and I see nothing wrong with that. I'm a parent who's a coach. I just don't happen to coach my daughter because she's not in high school yet. However, I will say this. She runs for my track club, but I'm not the only coach at my track club. My track club is a track club of many. There's many of us that are involved in it. So even though I refer to it as my track club, it's our track club. So I have, you know, other coaches that I work with and respect. And we have event-specific coaches. We have age-level coaches. And my daughter is not in the age group that I coach, so she has her own coach. My thing is I want her to know what it's like to have a coach that's not daddy, so that she can know that she has to listen to that coach. Do I talk to her about, you know, what she should be doing, you know, after practice and in between seasons? Of course, you know, because I want the best for her. But at the end of the day, when it comes time for practice, if I have, you know, a coach that's in place to coach her and I respect that coach, I need to let that coach be a coach. And I'm not going to overstep, you know, that coach, because obviously if I'm working with the coach, I respect the coach. I need to let that coach. And I need to let my child know that, look, you have a coach. This is who you need to be listening to when you're not listening to me. So that's my take on parent coaches. You know, it's cool. It's great. But don't do it just for your kid. Make sure you're there for everybody.
Yeah, and going back to favoritism, there are most coaches do show favoritism in
Yeah.
some way or another, but
We don't treat everybody equal, but we treat them fair.
yes. All right, I've tended to quote unquote show favoritism for people who were hurdlers. All right, I've done a lot with hurdles. I've researched a lot with hurdles. Hell, even when I was in graduate school, one of my presentations was a biomechanical analysis of the high hurdle.
He's
All right.
smart. He's smart, everybody. He's very smart. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I've done a lot, so I do tend to I have tended to show favoritism in that realm. But gosh, I'm working with everyone though.
Yeah. And there's way, I think there's actually a way to show favoritism in a positive way. A good example. Sometimes I show favoritism to those new athletes because I figure my veteran athletes, you know the routine, you know the warm-up. You know what the workout is. You know what I expect. I'm not going to neglect you. But at the same time, these new kids haven't done this before, or maybe it's their first time trying an event. So they're going to need more attention earlier in the season. Now, once we get later towards the season where it's championship season, my quote unquote favoritism may shift to that athlete. Okay, you are our top athlete. You're one of our top athletes. We need to fine tune this, that, and this so that you can be ready for that championship meet in 3 weeks. You know, and some coaches I know, after a certain part of the season where they might have a JV championship in your area, that might be the end of the season for a lot of your JV or your newer athletes anyway, so that you can focus more on those championship level athletes. So it can be a positive way, I guess you can say, to have favoritism, just so that you have to look at it like this. Those studs you have that are juniors and seniors and all Americans and this and the third, they're going to graduate eventually. And when they graduate, what's going to happen?
You got to build the people in the bottom.
Exactly.
More on that, in a future episode.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going in.
Oh, yeah. He's going in. Licking off shots. Shots fired. Yeah.
Maybe with names. I'm not sure.
Hey, drop name drop. We drop bombs, too. I had the sound effects going next time.
Okay.
We drop some bombs. We drop some names. It's okay. It's all love. It's all learning, you know. And just to give a little highlight, we've pretty much covered what we want to talk about, for this first episode, but just give an avenue. I'm just throwing out words. I'm sounding like
Yeah, you
Stephen A.
are.
Smith. I'm bloviating.
Egregious.
Yeah. But just to give an idea and outline of some of the things we're going to be discussing in upcoming episodes, we're going to be giving out some information for parents. New athletes. If you are that new athlete, you're just joining track for the first time, or maybe you moved and this is a new team, what are some things that you can expect? If you're a new coach, this is your, you maybe you did run track before, and now this is your first time on the coaching end, or maybe you never ran track, but you coached before. You coached football, you coached basketball, you coached soccer, but now you want to coach track and you want to learn. What are some things that you'll expect? Veteran athletes, what are some things that you need to be doing to better yourself and to be a positive veteran on that team? Side coaches, side sports. That's going to be probably the most bombs dropped episode when we get to that one, because that is, I would, what do we call that? Epidemic,
It can be.
yeah, epidemic, outbreak, thorn in one side. I mean, it's you have athletes that are on your team that may have coaches on the side coaching them in events that you already coached them in that you don't know about. You may have athletes on your team that are running track and playing other sports during that season. So how do you deal with that? We'll talk later. Veteran coaches, obviously coaches who have been around for a while, what are some things that you can do in this time of, technology and change and everything, all this available information that's out there? How do you relate to that kid that's on your team when you've been coaching for 10, 15, 20 years? Times change, the kids get, the kids are going to still be young. You're getting older. Technology changes. How do you adapt and adjust, to that? How can we make track enjoyable? What can we add to it to make it better? What can we get rid of to make it better? Things like that. Say, for example, you're a coach and you have a team of 80, and all you have to work with is a 50-meter hallway. How do you successfully hold a practice?
Good luck.
Say you have a team of 100, and you have a facility, but there's other sports going on that also use that same facility.
Good luck.
We'll talk about it, you know. Big meet experiences. And we're not just talking about big invitationals locally. We're not talking about just championship meets, but what about like the national events? What about big relay events? What about, you know, Drake relays? What about USATF track and field? You know, different things that you can expect from big meets and big meet experience. Penn relays, you know, that's a really, really big meet. It's on national TV, but high school kids, college, and pros run there. So, you know, what are some things that your athletes might need to know when going into some of these big meets? Sports nutrition. What should we be eating? What should we not be eating?
I eat whatever I want.
Should we go on a diet?
I do whatever I want.
Should we not go on a diet? You know, should we drink soda? Should we just drink water? You know, are bananas good between races? Are they not? You know, is it a myth? You know, things like that. A lot of kids, they want to know, like, should I be eating different things? Do I need to go on a diet? No. But we'll talk about that.
McDonald's, Burger King, Wendy's,
Chipotle is
life. I'm just talking about the stuff I've already had this week, and it's a Wednesday. Yep. Sorry.
Five Guys, burgers, and you forgot about Taco Bell.
Oh, I'm always at Taco Bell.
Yeah, Yo Quiero Taco Bell.
Yeah, that's my second home.
Is this fueling you to a successful invitational this weekend? We'll talk about it.
Yeah, I'm not running, so I do what I want.
Yeah. Coaches, you know, you gotta model it a certain way. Then at the same time, you gotta be like, look, I'm hungry. What's more important, being healthy or being hungry?
I don't know.
At the end of the day, sometimes you gotta eat. But and then as the year progresses on, we'll throw out some track and field news at the high school level, the college level, pro level. Who broke a world record? Who broke a national record? You know, who's a young and up and coming rising star in high school that's maybe in the eighth grade, but faster than everybody in their age group? That's faster than everybody in their state, you know, seniors included. You know, we'll talk about it. So just be on the lookout. You know, if you're on YouTube, they got buttons down below. It's one says subscribe. Click on that subscribe button. You can get a alert every time we post an episode. And we'll be back later with, you know, the social media handles and all that stuff. We can post that in the link in the description, all that stuff. So
very soon.
Very, very soon. All right, you got anything you want to add?
No.
Man of many words, Mr. Ferdy right there. Well, we want to thank y'all for joining us for the first episode of Track Talk with CH and Ferdy. We hope you enjoyed it. We hope you come back for the next episode, because we're going to be talking to the parents. We'll see y'all in a week. Holler.
Deuce.